Hey everyone, John here. Just a quick word of warning. We will be spoiling this film in its entirety. So if you have not seen this film and you don't want it spoiled for you, just hit pause real quick and go and watch the movie and then come back and enjoy the show.
And Del Antonio, good luck. Last gift ceremony was a bummer. Last one being yours, that did not work.
If I was you, I'll be really sad.
Well, my little friend, I am not. Because the truth is, gift or no gift, I am just as special as the rest of my family.
Who wants more cake?
All right, guys, where do I drop the wagon?
Maybe your gift is being in denial.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Surviving Chick Flicks. I'm John.
I'm Sammy.
I'm Joseph.
And this week, And this week we have a special guest who picked the movie. Why don't you introduce yourself, special guest?
And I'm Aisley.
Hi, Aisley. Who are you? Who are you, and what do you do?
I don't even know.
Good answer. So when we were planning out the schedule for this year, Aisley said she wanted to do a movie. And what did you pick for us to do?
Encanto.
She will be the one and only person to say the movie's name right the entirety of the film or the entirety of the episode.
She will correct you. She's like, that's not how you say it.
Yeah, but I'm also going to... Oh, go ahead.
She's saying can't. Canto, but it's Encanto. A silent.
Yeah. Yeah, but we're going to be saying Encanto because we white.
I'll say Encanto.
Fine. Be correct. All right, so we're going to do what we always do. We're going to play the trailer, and then we're going to come and talk about. We can talk about the movie. We may not be able to talk about Bruno.
Many years ago, this candle blessed our family with a miracle. Our house, our casita, came to life with magic.
Hola, casita.
Floors! Drawers! Let's go!
In time, every member of our family,
Cecilia, up top,
was given their own magical gift.
You?
I'm not super strong like Luisa.
The donkey's got out again.
On it!
Or effortlessly perfect like Señorita Perfecta Isabella. But Mama, why am I the only one that didn't get a gift?
You're just as special as anyone else in this family.
You just healed my hand with an arepa con queso.
The magic is in danger.
We gotta get out of here!
We must protect our home. We must protect our family.
This is my chance. I will save the magic. Wait, how do I save the magic?
I'm losing my gift!
Mirabel, the fate of the family is gonna come down to you.
Do this.
Let me help you. The rats told me everything. Don't eat those.
Even in our darkest moments, there's light where you least expect it. Whoa. A lot of stairs. But at least I'll have a friend. Nope, you flew away immediately.
Quitter! All right, the TikTok movie, starring Stephanie Beatriz, Maria Cecilia Botero, John Leguizamo, Mauro Castillo, Jessica Darrow, Angie Cepeda, K
Carolina Gatan, Diane Guerrero, Wilmer Valderrama, a.k.a. Fez, and the voice of Alan Tudyk as a toucan, co-written and co-directed by Charisse Castro and directed by Jared Bush and Byron Howard. And then some guy that's very close to an EGOT did a bunch of songs. So
I thought I was going to be the first person to bring up that it was a TikTok movie.
Oh, no, no. My other joke was, since this is the 60th film produced by Disney, this is We Hate You, Disney Hates Your Parents, Volume 60. So we'll go around and we will find out. We'll do the usual question. When was the first time you saw this? And why don't we start with Aisley?
When's the first time you watched Encanto?
I don't even.
Go to theaters to see it? I'm sure you watched. No?
I don't even know.
She'd have no clue. But she's.
Oh, God. We have another Sammy.
I love this movie. When did you see it? I don't remember.
Does Aisley want to host this show? She fits right in. Joseph, when was the first time you saw it?
It was actually a week ago when me and her first watched. That was the first time I watched it.
That was not a week ago. That was like 2 months ago.
Was it not 2 months ago? See, we're both bad with time.
Hey.
But yeah, first time I watched it was with her when we were getting ready for this episode.
Okay. Sammy, should.
Four.
Do what?
I said the only movies he watches with me is the movies he hoards.
No comment. Sammy, when was the first time you watched it?
Approximately, I started watching it this past Saturday, and I finished it somewhere around 24 hours ago.
You know, it's not a. The show's not a test in high school. You don't have to push everything to the last minute.
You don't know me at all.
I think I do. And yeah, I saw this maybe a couple weeks ago. I know when we were really starting to plan doing the episode. I think I may have started it after we were recorded one of the episodes. But yeah, and I'm assuming we all saw it on Disney Plus, right?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, and I know this got a theatrical release, but. Does anyone remember it coming out in theaters? It just seemed like one day, I turned on my Roku and it was just like, Encanto, watch now.
It did. I remember it coming to theaters because I can't remember what movie I went and saw, but I kept seeing the poster for it saying it was playing. But I think it was at the point where people were starting to come out to the theaters after during the pandemic, but not quite full-fledged yet.
Yeah, I like how you said after the pandemic, like it's over.
Everybody.
Yeah. I don't go to the movies as frequently as I used to, which was, once upon a time a weekly occurrence. But with Same this, way. like I don't, I vaguely maybe remember possibly seeing a poster at like a theater. I know this came out around Thanksgiving, which meant, Sammy and I were knee deep in doing the Elf musical.
And I was just knee deep in working.
Yeah. As you should be. All right. So we kind of alluded to it. Lin-Manuel Miranda kind of must know where some bodies are buried out at Disney, because it seems like he's suddenly Disney's new golden boy, because he did Mary Poppins Returns, he did music for Moana, and now this one. Plus, he sold his most popular musical to them, which I'm glad he did, and I really want a Blu-ray of it.
I would too.
Yeah.
I still want them to make, like, an actual movie version of it, if that makes sense.
I get where your head's at, but I think the live performance that they did of Hamilton is the case of why not every movie needs a musical. Not every musical needs a movie made of it, because I can't imagine what the budget for that would be like, and making it back is probably not impossible. Although, if you saw the numbers for In the Heights, maybe a little impossible. Well, but
especially a musical that's set at a certain time period, that gets expensive quickly.
Yeah. I mean, that might be a sinking ship. Plus, even though I'm a fan of the Rent music, like the Rent movie, people will always say that the movie is never as good as the actual show. So I was hoping that it would kind of set a new precedent where we would get more of the filmed performances from Broadway. Like, I know they have Broadway HD and they do some shows, but not everything gets released. And God, I would have rather have seen a, I know, Sammy, you liked the movie. I still haven't seen it, but Dear Evan Hansen, I would have rather seen a filmed version of the stage production than the movie.
So would I. I would about a million times have rather seen that on stage because of some things they cut for the film. I think it would have been much better on stage. I'd say the only exception to this, and I know you hate this, John, and I actually have no evidence to back this up. This is just speculation. I believe that Moulin Rouge, the film, is just not going to be as good adapted on stage. That's just my personal opinion.
No, I agree with you, because I did listen to part of the cast album, and it really was just like someone put on like a bunch of karaoke tracks on shuffle. And I'm sure on stage it probably is really cool to see, but yeah, I'm going to side with you actually and say that the movie of Moulin Rouge is probably better, because what, and this is the problem with a lot of jukebox musicals, and I'm going to end up accidentally slandering a show I love, but what is the point of just taking a bunch of other people's songs and weaving them into a show? And I'm realizing that, you know, cuts down to stage performances I helped out on. So.
Yeah, I think if you're going to go that route, you have to do it really, really well. And your best case scenario is going to be like a Rocketman or Bohemian Rhapsody or Walk the Line, where there's the reason it's not so much a musical as a musical biopic.
Yeah. You know there is a stage musical of Queen's music. Apparently nobody liked it. Because it's not about Queen.
Right. And I mean, if you think about like Mamma Mia was, you know, they did a similar thing with that. They're like, oh, let's just take Abba's music and make a story around it.
Yeah. I mean, and I loved working on Rock of Ages. It's still one of my favorite memories of doing stuff in theater. Still to this day, but it's just like, why couldn't we just write original songs? Why do I need to hear you doing Whitesnake again?
Right.
Because Whitesnake rules.
Calm down. Sir, you're in timeout.
I'm always in timeout.
Yeah. So, would anyone not named John like to do a small plot synopsis of this movie?
Basically, do you want to explain the plot of the movie? Do you want to explain what the movie is about? Come here and do it.
I
think that about sums it up, actually.
Yeah, pretty much. Something about a mirror. A girl makes flowers. Also, how much longer is it going to be until the characters from Encanto end up in the MCU? You're about to get replaced by a sock puppet on air.
That's pretty good.
As I sit here on my high and mighty perch as the only person on the show to not pick a video game movie.
Okay. Well, here, look. For those of you that honestly have not watched the movie and are only listening to this episode, maybe because you're mildly curious, it's about this family in an indeterminate South American country, I would assume.
Colombia.
That's kind of what I was thinking, is it's Colombia. So But it's about a specific family and an entire town. And from the gist I get, everybody in this family has been given a special magical gift. I don't exactly know why. And basically...
because the script said so.
Yeah, it's vague.
Yeah.
One of the daughters, the main character, she was not given a gift. And about the time that her younger cousin, brother?
Yeah, cousin. He's a cousin that looks up to her as like a sibling.
Okay. On the night he's given his gift, something happens that causes things to kind of mess up. And basically, the family starts losing their magic. What's the name of the main character again?
Maribel.
Maribel, right. So in order to fix it, Maribel wants to seek the help of Bruno, who is a member of their family that nobody talks about. In fact, they do a whole song about it.
if you've been on TikTok, you've heard it.
And basically, her whole family is angry at her for wanting to seek his help. They're in denial that anything's wrong with their magic. She seeks his help anyways, and he basically comes to the conclusion that she needs to reconcile with her sister in order to get the magic back because he has a vision. Well, she makes an attempt to do this. She does kind of do it, and things start to get fixed, but her whole family gets angry at her, and basically the entire house implodes. And the whole family finally comes together, and when they come together, the magic is restored, the town is rebuilt, and everybody lives happily ever after. And that is my very weak synopsis of
films. You did good. You're going to do these every week now. Every week.
Not happening.
Just one minor correction. I don't think it's really her whole family that gets mad at her. It's really one sister and her abuela.
Yeah, it was her. She,
yeah,
because that's what I liked about this movie. There really wasn't a villain. It was just her abuela's inability to just see things that are wrong and just brush it under the rug. Just like, yep, nothing's wrong. Get away. So, you know, you are the problem, not me. I'm not the problem.
Here's kind of my question is, I don't know, is it just me, or do I kind of felt like that whole idea behind she had to reconcile with her sister was just like a, hey, Frozen did it and it was super successful. And I loved it, so.
It could have had a little bit of that, but yeah. It was a good red herring.
One, at least one song in this movie literally says, let it snow, let it go. Just going to throw that out there. Okay. Also, the last name of the surname of the family is Madrigal, and that actually is a musical term, and it's basically a song where several people sing over each other, overlapping melodies, kind of like they do in this movie.
It's at a point.
Yeah.
Let me think for. I forgot. Oh, and one of the songs in there, it's in Spanish. But some of the parts, it sounds like they're singing the Little Mermaid song. It sounds like Undead the Sea.
Honestly, there are quite a few songs in this movie, and I do not want to accuse Lin-Manuel Miranda of, theft. I just want to say sometimes inspiration finds its way through, but the song, I'm guessing the English language title would be Two Caterpillars, and I only know that because I watched everything with closed captioning on, and Disney Plus did me a solid and told me what they were singing in English.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so I was like, ooh, this is a big help. And it's honestly probably the best song in the film, and also it is the one, coincidentally, nominated for an Oscar. Just throwing that out there. But parts of that, it felt like it had melodies of like an old Ace of Base song at times. And Luis's song, the one about pressure. Mm-hmm. Parts of it, particularly towards the beginning, reminded me of kind of the vocal arrangements on a song that Joseph and I know quite well called Mark It Up.
Yeah, but that's, yeah. That's a weird one to steal from Repo the Chupacabra.
How cool though would it be that, you know, Tony Award winner, Oscar nominee, you know, Pulitzer Prize winner, Lin-Manuel Miranda was low-key dropping that he was a fan of Repo.
That would be pretty cool, though.
Actually. That would be pretty cool.
But still, that's a weird one. Like, what was the answer for that one? A little thing called Repo the Genetic Opera.
Tip, tip, Tony does go pop.
Yeah, so here's kind of my other question. And I mean, okay. Like I said, this may be like giving it away how much of the film I paid attention to. Okay. I was just a little lost there in the middle about how they gained this magic, but mainly why the magic was going away. That's what I didn't understand.
It's because the last skill failed because the magic is going out after so many years. It's becoming control.
Oh, okay. And then why don't... Okay, and here's the other thing I don't feel like they explained as well. Who is Bruno in connection to the family? Is he, like, the oldest son? And why don't they talk about him?
Well, go ahead.
Well, they don't talk about it because it's one of those, they blame him for everything that's happened, even though he just receives visions. It's one of the, like, well, it's obviously him. He's the problem. He's making these things happen because he sees them and then they happen. Not the, oh, this is going to happen if you don't listen to
him. Yeah. And part of him going into exile is because he feels like he felt guilty about possibly ruining everyone's lives when it wasn't necessarily his fault.
It's not his fault because even in the song, we don't talk about Bruno. You hear people like, he said this will happen and then did. So why would he do that? But he did. He saw it coming, and you ignored it, and it happened. And you're like, oh, why did this thing happen that you said was going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, when people actually see bad things happening, and like, why did you tell me that was going to happen? It's just your fault.
And did they ever really, like, establish why she didn't have a gift? Because kind of what I got out of it is the moral of this, not really the moral of the story, but the, like, big aha was that her gift was her ability to bring the family together.
That I think it was its... Oh, go ahead.
I think that really was her gift. It was just not one of those that it manifests into power.
Yeah. And also, I kind of felt like he wasn't sure what the vision was about her.
Aisley had something.
Do you want to know an Easter egg in it?
Sure.
When they sing the song, We Don't Talk About Bruno, there's a part that you can actually see him dancing in the background. It's just a shadow of him dancing, passing by.
Oh, nice. whenever I rewatch, well, whether or not I survive this movie, if I choose to rewatch it, I'll have to look for that.
Yeah, she's watched it many times. She's like, did you notice this part? I was like, I did not notice that part.
you're like, honey, I gave a cursory watch to this. So no.
But also I think the whole thing was she was also under so much pressure from her abuela that it's one of those it didn't work out because she was pressuring her so much. Everybody else just came easily. And since it didn't come to her, it's one of those the reason why the band is going out is she's fracturing the
also one of her cousins is making it hard on her too.
Mm-hmm.
Flower Girl.
Yeah, the Flower Girl is hard on everybody.
I thought the Flower Girl was her sister.
It is. She is the sister, but it's one of those, like, she also, there's, all the family is, especially what is causing friction between all of them because of the how she perceives her.
She's just like, get out of my way, I'm perfect.
Your dad says that every week on the show.
I do say that every week.
I do think one of the most unique things, which I actually will say I kind of appreciated about it, and you could argue that Frozen started the whole thing, but this really, for a Disney movie, this is the first Disney movie that I can remember seeing where the focus was not a love story.
No, yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't a love story. It was just a much more of a family dynamic.
Right.
And I think
it wasn't a love story at all. I mean, her sister was supposed to be getting engaged, but she wasn't even in love with the guy and never really did marry him.
Yeah, because everybody fell, I guess, kind of fell in love at the end, but it wasn't like a, hey, this is the story. It was like, oh, yeah, they found somebody they liked.
Right, except Maribel, of course.
Well, yeah.
Well, and also Maribel's 15.
Oh,
that doesn't mean
yeah. But at the same time, I have noticed kind of this trend, and it maybe kind of started after Frozen, where Disney and Pixar really kind of started focusing less on let's tell love stories. Let's look at different cultures, because you know you had the Samoans for Moana. I'm assuming it's the Samoans. I still haven't seen that movie. Scream at me, internet, all you want. I don't hear you.
We're doing that some other time now.
Probably. But also, like, Raya and the Last Dragon had, you know, looked at an Asian culture, and then also they just did Turning Red, which just dropped on Disney Plus, like, not even a week ago. Also looking at an Asian culture as well. Also in Toronto, which makes it arguably a Canadian film.
Yeah, I like that, because it's, I like seeing different aspects of different cultures.
Yeah, I'm kind of done seeing the sad-ass white girl on in a Disney movie.
Where we're at, we can just go down the street and see that.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Go ahead.
Hey, y'all don't hate on the sad white girl.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with them, but, you know, we don't need to see them all the time.
Yeah, you've had, like, 54 movies. Give others a break to be sad.
People hate Red for
no reason
just because she's a teenager.
Do what?
People hate Turning Red for no reason just because she's a teenager and there's teenager stuff.
That would be almost every Disney movie.
Yeah.
And Pixar movie.
Which is a Disney movie.
Disney is single-handedly responsible for the start of my screwed up view of love and relationships.
I'm just going to blame whenever I found my first Dashboard Confessional CD. So,
Turning Red took 5 years to make.
It did?
Mm-hmm.
Why did it take 5 years?
Because they wanted to make something different than they usually make.
Gotcha.
I've watched.
And honestly, that's about the usual timeline for one of these kind of movies.
Very, very true, because it took them
a long time. I was going to ask. I think they have a regular, their production time is vastly, I don't even know the word I'm looking for. It's way lengthier than a normal.
Well, don't they use more than one movie in the works at a time?
That part I don't know, you know, possibly, but I can see them having like several different, you know, groups in the studio working on several different movies because, you know, so many come out.
Well, yeah, because there's been times like, oh, wait, there's another Pixar movie coming out this year.
Mm-hmm. So, Maribel almost wasn't played by the voice actress that played her. She's played by Stephanie Beatriz, who a lot of people will know as Officer Rosa Diaz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, I didn't know that until you told me.
Yeah, and, you know, if you've seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine, she's very stuff, I mean, you know, very, very stuff, very stiff, very rigid, very intimidating, and she's kind of got a different voice. And that's not her actual voice. It's all a character that she made up, you know, and kind of found whenever she took that role, and they were wanting her originally for Louisa, and then whenever they met her, and they're like, "Oh, you're kind of like happy and bubbly," they thought she would work better for Maribel, and I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I think the big question. Oh, and the big question I always have with these films is the voice actor the same person who did the music, because I remember. It blew my mind finding out that Jonathan Taylor Thomas was the, I don't think he was the one that did the music for Lion King. He just did the voice of young Simba.
Possibly. Yeah. I don't know where I was necessarily going, but well, and also that's kind of a holdover from old, you know, older musicals that, you know, you have the actress for the film and then you have someone that does the singing voice, because this may shock you, non-Hispanic Natalie Wood, when she was playing Maria in West Side Story, did not sing any of those songs. So, and then I and also animation, it's a lot easier to find someone that can sing and someone can act, because look at like something like Nightmare Before Christmas, Catherine O'Hara and Chris, oh god, the prince from Princess Bride, whatever his real name is.
Carrie.
Not Carrie. He was not the prince. No, he was Dread Pirate Roberts. Like Chris Sarandon from Fright Night. Oh. Wow. Why did I blank on that? Those two did the speaking voice, where I don't remember who sang Catherine O'Hara's parts in Nightmare Before Christmas, but Danny Elfman did the singing voice of Jack Skellington. So, and now they just look for people that can do everything.
I was curious about that with this film, because also another tidbit, they still do that in live action films. They did it with Zac Efron in the first High School Musical. No, not him singing. I think he's sang in all the subsequent movies, which makes little to no sense to me. But
Now I'm never seeing the High School Musical films, because, you know, I want all Zach all the time, that part of the time. But what was great about this film?
I said the third one's the best one, anyways.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we didn't have High School Musical, we wouldn't have High School Musical, musical, and we wouldn't have High School Musical. Huh?
Hold on a second. Are you telling me that both of y'all have never seen High School Musical?
No, we're men.
I'm 40.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
I am 40.
We're so doing this.
Oh god!
No, we've seen them all three multiple times.
No, millions of times. I'm sorry. You just called yourselves out. This is happening.
Okay. Be mad about the result.
Yep. We're going to find another John Waters movie, and it's not going to be Hairspray or Crybaby.
Tell me a ghost. Don't do this to me.
Joseph, there may be some collateral damage. Papa ooh, mau, mau. But anyway.
The voice actors in this film also did the music. That's kind of what I was getting at, right?
Yeah, yes. And some of them, not all of them, but some of them also did their voices for the Spanish language version of the film as well.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. And, looking through the cast list, I'm going to be honest, I don't know a lot of these people. But it was cool to see the names of John Leguizamo and Wilmer Valderrama, who were part of my teenage years, and I'm sure part of Joseph's teenage years as well, thanks to, you know,
That
70s show, and every time John Leguizamo conned someone into giving him money to do something that will be canceled later down the road.
I grew up watching. I used to watch The Pest, which is one of your favorite movies. And even though it's not a good movie, I do enjoy it. Spawn, he killed it in Spawn.
You know what, Joseph? If I make her watch Pink Flamingos and you have to sit through it, I'll take the bullet of The Pest.
I don't know if I want to put both of y'all through that, because after watching it, it's like, yeah, this is not as good as I remember.
It was never good. First of all, it was never good. Let's just establish that right now. But I'm just saying, I'm willing to take that bullet if I have to sit through a High School Musical.
Oh, okay.
No. It would be totally worth it.
Say that.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that we should watch those films together.
Which ones? High School Musical?
Yes. I think it would be more fun as a joint viewing experience.
Okay,
but we're also going to watch The Pest and Pink Flamingos together. Again, sorry, Joseph.
Just
not pink flamingos.
Huh?
I said not pink flamingos.
Oh no. All or nothing.
Anyway, none of which are the film that we're talking about. I do have to say one of the things that I did like kind of stood out to me was how beautiful this film was. Like, yeah. Absolutely, it was stunning.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of that does come from the fact that the creative team actually went to Columbia to get the, not just, you know, how the people were and what the culture was like, but also just what the whole place looked like. It, you know, so they got to bring back a whole lot of, you know, visual style.
Not just that, it's just Disney's animation has gotten a lot better, because I remember when they were first transitioning to 3D animation, it was like, you really don't know what y'all are doing right now.
Yeah.
Like they were really trying to find out how to transition it. Some of those early movies are just like, what the hell?
Well, I don't even... whenever they first started doing it. Well, Pixar kind of came out of the gate doing well, and there was a really dark time for Disney whenever stuff like Home on the Range came out, and was it Mars Needs Moms or something like that?
Such a terrifying movie, and I don't think they meant it to be that way.
Yeah. Oh, Chicken Little.
Yeah. Like I said, there was a dark time where 3D movies from Disney, anything came from Pixar was great because it was Pixar. But whenever Disney was doing it, it was just like, y'all are trying really hard, and y'all really are not figuring out why they do a good job on them.
All right, Joseph, I'm going to say something nice about a studio I use as my own personal punching bag. But even Sony was not doing terrible. Like, because they put out what, robots? That was them, right?
Yeah, I think it was them.
Yeah, I mean, someone also put out Shark Tale, but you know, not everyone. Nobody's nerfed, you know.
Well, even DreamWorks.
That bad.
DreamWorks is killing it with Shrek. Plus, you know, you still were having people doing the traditional, you know, because Studio Ghibli was coming in, putting out the superior product, and always losing at the Oscars because why not?
Sure. So, who came up with the concept for this film?
That came from Charisse Castro-Smith. She kind of came up with the idea, and then Disney picked it up, got Jared Bush to kind of help, you know, put the script together. And then, of course, Bush and his partner, Byron Howard, took over the directing duties, but also brought in Charisse to help them. So that's why she doesn't get a director credit, but she gets a co-director credit, which irks me, but I understand it. If I have to accept Bryan Singer directed Bohemian Rhapsody.
Even though he kind of didn't.
He directed part of it.
True. We just don't know which parts.
Yeah, Directors Guild of America, where we'll give you director credit even if you got fired from your movie. I never tire of the soapbox. So, I know the song says we can't, but we got to talk about Bruno. Mostly John Leguizamo. I think this is possibly the best thing he's done in years.
I would agree with that.
Although, yeah. Hey, he did really good in John Wick.
I forget about that, but I don't want to insult Leguizamo here where I'm saying he's not the most memorable part of that, because also someone from the show The Newsroom was on there as well, and
true. I was just saying that because I did like him with John Wick.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and he is great, but honestly, people like Ian McShane and the bellhop or the concierge from this little show that I've never talked about called The Wire showed up. John Wick is a series that has so much going on. You kind of forget, oh yeah, you were in that.
And also yeah, the movie honestly, is all about I feel like this is the best thing Disney has done in a minute. And I could be wrong about that, but, and that's no offense to Frozen or anything. I just think that this is, honestly a little bit better quality.
Yeah. Well, and have you seen Moana?
Moana was good.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I know that one's pretty beloved. And both Disney and Pixar in the last few years have been hit and miss for both houses. And I would rather see Disney do something like this, something a little bit risky, and possibly take a flop than them to keep doing the live-action remakes.
Oh, they're still going to keep doing that.
I know they are. I'm just saying what I want.
But back to Bruno. Yeah, I kind of liked and wasn't anticipating. He sort of played two different characters, mm-hmm. which I thought was funny. But it always shocks me when I notice in a voice acting, like a non-live action film, when it seems that the characters have chemistry, that they work well together. I thought there mm-hmm. was none of that was lacking in this film. And I don't know if that comes down to just the voice actors or comes down to the quality of the animators, but for actors that were possibly never in a room together.
They never met in person until a socially distanced screening at a drive-in. They were never in the same, like most of them probably did their parts from their homes.
Right, it really puts into perspective when live-action films have actors that don't have chemistry. These people that are cartoon characters, not even in the same room together, have more chemistry than you do.
Yeah,
or, you know, it's funny because there's a lot of voice actors that like the show I love, X-Men: The Animated Series. They had voice actors in Canada that never met each other. They had a writing team in America, and I think their animation was in South Korea. So they had to keep making these episodes without really, before internet was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you would never know that they weren't in the same room or that they didn't all collaborate together because it worked so well.
Yeah, well,
really good chemistry. And you're just like, oh, yeah, there were times we had no idea if we were going to be able to get this pulled off because it was just everybody was on different time zones.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the state of animation today because, you know, there are so many, because we live a couple hours away from, what's that anime studio that got in trouble? Funimation?
Yes.
Yeah, they have a studio in Dallas. Plus, what the state of technology is, I mean, I will always go back to this. Harry Shearer, who does 11 jillion voices on The Simpsons, does all of his performances on the phone from his home in New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And plus, you know, that was another show that did everything in America and shipped overseas to get done. So.
And in last week's episode, Michael Keaton literally Skyped in his performance.
Yes, he did. Can we call Monarch a pioneer and just say that, you know, He was on the cutting edge. He was ahead of his time.
He was ahead of his time. He was COVID cautious before COVID existed.
Yeah. All right, just to go back to last week's episode for a second, I listened to another podcast review that because I forgot they did all these video game movies and they had done that one. And they kept referring to Pete as Dead Pete.
Oh, that's terrible.
Was this the one that I should like, but I don't.
Yes, it is. It's the one.
Did they recommend that movie?
I didn't finish it. I had to get pulled away. I know one person on that show, and his name begins with an S. Not only recommended it, declared it the best video game movie ever, over the first Resident Evil movie and the Alicia Vikander Tomb Raider.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was sitting here going, well, that's a decision you made.
It's wrong, but it's a decision.
It's like, no, you were the one I normally agree with. You were the chosen one.
All right, well, is there anything else y'all want to discuss before we move into our segment?
Hey, Sam, you want to discuss before?
How dare you talk about Bruno?
Sammy did it.
We had to discuss him.
Yeah. I do have one. I want to talk about Luisa and how she is awesome. She's the super strong sister.
Yeah, one of those doesn't have a lot in this movie, but when she's great.
Yeah.
I honestly really enjoyed her song.
Mm-hmm. Our friend Michobe declared it the best song in the film.
I can.
Yeah, and the lesbians and the queers, we have claimed her. She is an LGBT icon on screen and off.
I do think that that kind of led to the other running theme in this film, which I really liked. That basically because of these gifts, I don't know. I guess it was more the gifts suited who the person already was, but because of their gifts, they kind of all got thrown into these roles they didn't necessarily want to be in, and they were all feeling the same way as Maribel was.
Yeah, I think the only exception is maybe the one that just got his gifts, because he seemed pretty happy to be talking to animals.
Well, yeah, but yeah. Who wouldn't be? He got the best gift, clearly.
Yeah. Plus, the toucan that was his buddy, is voiced by Alan Tudyk, who does a lot of stuff for Disney. You know, he's kind of the John Ratzenberger to, you know, and Pixar. You know, he's Disney's recurring actor. And fun fact, he went to college in East Texas.
Oh.
Yeah, and I'm about to make a whole bunch of people mad, but it just makes me so happy whenever I see him soar like a leaf on the wind. That means nothing to most people on this show, but someone real mad right now. All right, we want to move into topics.
Yeah. So on Surviving Chick Flicks, we have several segments. It started out as like two and is ballooned into like five. But the one I like to start off with, and I think especially on this episode, is: did John like the soundtrack?
Okay, first of all, that's not fair because I may have to show my hand, but as a whole, I mean, I like the soundtrack. I mean, you almost have to like the soundtracks in these films that are also musicals. Otherwise, your story's kind of dead in the water. With this, and there are songs I like more than others, but yeah, it was fun.
All right.
This is where we move to the next one.
I don't think I have a creepier romantic moment of the film this week. Yeah. So
I do have a Bechdel test.
All right.
According to BechdelTest.com, passed with flying colors.
Yeah.
Not really a shock.
No. Considering this film is mostly female led, and it's not a high bar in the first place. If you don't know what the Bechdel test is, every week we do have a segment asking whether or not the film passed the Bechdel test. If you don't know what it is, go look it up or listen to a previous episode where we explain it, because John has prevented us from explaining it every episode.
Thank you.
Okay, before we get into the big ones, why don't we do the guess what the Rotten Tomato score is on this one?
Who wants to go first?
John.
I'm going to go with 87.
Okay.
Critic score, I'm going to go with 91.
Oh, wow. You hit it right on the spot.
Oh, wow.
It was a 91.
Can we start doing this for money? Because I feel like I'm really good at this.
No. Okay. No, because I'm not good at this.
Sometimes the audience score could be about the same. Sometimes it could be wildly different. What do you think the audience score was?
I'm going to go with 94.
Okay.
97.
Aisley, what do you think?
3,569,500.
Okay.
She's not playing Price is Right with us.
She is not. It was at 93%.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
So that, yeah, it was pretty close to each other.
Obviously, there was that Roger Ebert review.
No, there's no Roger Ebert review for this one.
But for Roger Ebert. But for RogerEbert.com, it was considered beautiful, and that critic Monica Castillo, writing for Roger's website, thought that the musical sequences and characters rooms allowed animation for more artistic and abstract than that of the previous Disney films. You can't see it, but I'm giving the thumbs up here.
I think Roger Ebert would be proud.
Yep. I think Raj would have dug this movie.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah. Roger Ebert would have taken his review and turned it into a song, which, by the way, you two, I'm disappointed. Why didn't y'all sing this entire episode? Let me down.
That's what everybody's good at, John.
Yes, y'all are. Yes, y'all are.
All right, so... Y'all are going to have to go first for best line, worst line.
She can hear everything. And she was just like, nobody can know. And she goes, I know.
Yeah. By the way, I know we're not at things we like right now, but just that look of panic on the dad's face through that entire scene was just so well done. He's just like, oh, God. Oh, God. Well, we're just not going to tell anyone. They know. Oh, God.
I have a couple.
You do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one, they're both kind of moments. Is I really liked it at the beginning when she was singing that song to the town kid. The other one I really liked was Mirabelle's speech.
Yeah, that was
kind of towards the end of the film. I liked that. But I don't particularly have a worse line.
Yeah, I didn't have anything either. Like, nothing stood out.
Yeah, nothing stood out. Even if it was kind of a mild, okay. It was not enough to make me go, ugh, really?
I know what the worst line is.
What's the worst line?
We don't talk about bro, no.
I should have guessed that was going to happen.
Yeah. You walked into that one.
I walk into a lot of things with her. Yeah, there are a lot of things like, I should have known that's coming.
Yeah. The worst line is that one that keeps getting repeated. On TikTok.
So I'm going to, before we move on to the next segment, I'm going to add a new segment just specifically for this episode. What was your favorite song?
The one that's all over TikTok.
I think I'm going to agree with Kobe on the his favorite song, because I really liked it.
Okay. I'm going to say best song is the one up for Oscars, the two caterpillars that sung in Spanish. But my favorite, God help me, Bruno.
Yes.
I can't help it. Like, because I don't have children, I only hear that song whenever I choose to, or when I'm on TikTok, and that's the closest. So
before we get to Aisley's favorite one,
mm-hmm.
You know what's funny? I think it was Idina Menzel.
Mm-hmm. You mean Adele Dazeem?
Yeah, that too.
Get it right, Joseph.
Yeah. If it's good enough for John Travolta, it's
true. I think it was her. It could have been if it's not her and it was somebody else. I'm so sorry. But I think she was like, she came out and said, I want to apologize to all the parents after this song got up big. I get it now. I get why you hated me.
Well, I think
I completely understand.
Honestly, when it blows up on social media, which is just going to become more and more of a thing. I was sitting in a restaurant the other day, and literally they were playing music out on the back porch. I'm not exaggerating when I say I think every song that they played was a sound on TikTok that was currently trending.
Oh, wow.
Oh, please tell me one of the songs was about the strippers and the porn stars. Please tell me one of them.
No.
Was that song?
No, but there were children sitting out on the deck, and I did feel like an old woman. I'm like, oh, they probably heard worse. But they were playing that F.U.
Okay.
And your mom and your, yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm seeing that song getting a lot of flack from a lot of the music critics I like. I kind of like that song. As terrible as it is, like, I kind of like it. I also am dying on the hill that one of the Avril Lavigne songs from the new album isn't as bad as they're making it out to be. And no, it's not the one with MGK. No, it's not that one. Machine Gun Kelly can't sing. I'm just going to put that out there now.
Oh, but I do. I love one of his more recent songs, though.
If it's either a Paramore cover or Linkin Park, you're fired from the show.
No. It's the one he did with, I can't remember the name of the person he did it with.
Well, it's either Avril Lavigne or Willow Smith.
No. It's prior to that.
It's what?
It's prior to that.
Oh. I don't know. Someone that should have known better. But
I can't move the mountains. I can't control the morning rain or hurricane. Can't keep down the broken propane. Waiting on a miracle.
The favorite one? Oh, wow. I would have said we were talking about Bruno because you sing all the time, but I thought that was your favorite one.
She really just does that to torture you, kind of the way I sing Surfin' Bird. Well, not exactly the same, but... Papa ooh, meow, meow, papa ooh. It's getting a Blu-ray release.
Oh, no.
You can see that in crystal clear 4K.
I don't want to.
Like, it was bad enough in 480p.
It was for me.
And the gross part is Sammy has no idea what we're talking about.
No, you do. Not at all. The memories.
Yes, but we immediately followed it with Serial Mom, and you were fine.
Yeah, Serial Mom's great. I like that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah. So, unlike party sequences and, you know, underground film from the 70s, we want to talk about what we liked.
Do you want our guest to go first and say what you liked about the movie?
Yeah. Aisley, what did you like about this that we haven't talked about already?
Actually, I don't know. I need to think about that.
You did.
Y'all go first.
Okay.
God, she fits into the show really well.
Well, I'll tell you what I really liked, because we haven't really touched on it. I really liked the house as a character.
Yeah.
Because at first I was like, okay, is the house somebody's spirit, or is it just alive just because of magic? And I figured out, oh, it's because of magic. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
But it had a really good personality of its own.
No one's lived in this house for 30 years.
Well, and I did like little touches with their powers, because I really appreciate that. Like, anytime the dad just got something wrong with him, the mother just quickly slipped him like some food to make him feel better, or got stung a lot. And just in the background, you can just like, oh yeah, fine now.
Which was something I didn't catch on the first viewing. And then...
Because they did that a lot through the movie. If you don't, I bet if I go back and watch it again, I'll find little other little touches that I appreciate stuff like that, where it's just little details in the background you would not pick up like on the first watch. Aisley Think has one now.
Okay.
It's kind of like his. I like the part where she says, "Well, the house can't decorate itself," and then the house turns sad, and then she's like, "Sorry, you could."
That was good. I may be the only one on the show that caught the Doctor Who reference, or at least just coincidence, whenever the kid says, "Is it bigger on the inside?" The TARDIS is always bigger on the inside.
No, I caught that. I forgot all about it, though.
Yeah. Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Bringing Doctor Who to the young...
Yeah. Doctor Who, Repo, all the classics.
Yeah.
Also, while we're talking about it, this is kind of tangentially related. If you love Luis's song and we don't talk about Bruno, there is a band out of the UK called Punk Rock Factory that does pop punk versions that have done pop punk versions of the songs, and a whole album of like Disney covers. And Jarrett from Bowling for Soup did Let It Go with them.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. And you know how I found out about them? TikTok. Just keeping in theme with the movie.
As far as what I like, I have to agree. I like the house as a character. I thought that aspect of it was pretty cool. But I also really liked the way they incorporated people's gifts in, like, I don't know. It was, I think it's a little understated how funny. And he was like, "We're not telling anybody." And then I think it's her cousin who can hear everything. Yeah, is standing outside the door, and she's like, "I heard it." And I'm like, great, now she's going to tell everybody. I don't know, just like little things like that, little ways they kind of, moments that they had where they dropped in how people use their gifts.
Yeah, I think that made it, because why give these people gifts if you're not going to do little things, even little things to emphasize all this, you know? That's, and if whenever they do a new X-Men movie, which you know it's going to happen, it's going to get rebooted, I hope that they include little stupid things like that with their powers.
Yeah. They are talking about doing a Disney Plus show continuing the story.
Oh no, it's happening, and I'm excited.
Yeah.
Because the X-Men animated series is one of my favorite animated series. It still, for the most part, holds up.
No, Joseph, I mean Encanto. They're doing an Encanto series as well.
Oh, okay. About X-Men.
Yeah.
I get stuck on that.
No, we don't talk about X-Men.
Yes, we do. We talk about X-Men all the time. But I didn't know they were doing an Encanto series on Disney Plus. I'd be down for that.
I actually do.
Oh.
What you got?
It may have just been me, but the one thing that kind of bothered me about it was, for the length of the movie, I will say it didn't feel too long. Like, it felt like it went by really quick. So I'm not complaining about the length. I don't feel like the time was necessarily incredibly well utilized. There seemed to me to be something missing story-wise. Like, there was a gap in the story. And I don't know if the story just was told too quickly, or
Lynn just couldn't write the song,
right? Like, or I just wasn't paying attention or something. Like, it felt to me like not fully fleshed out. Like, I don't feel like I should have walked away with so many gaps in my understanding of what was going on, and I feel like, I always felt like those stories were super well fleshed out. Like, you could clearly understand if the characters were going on an adventure, you knew exactly what that adventure was. And then all these things happened along the way. And I don't know, it just seemed very weird to me. It was like, okay, here's some background information. Here's a little thing that's happening. And the problem just got fixed, like, really quick, before you even really had a good understanding of what the problem was.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that, you know, because I will admit I didn't pay 100% attention. I never pay 100% attention unless I paid money. And that's only because I can't play on my phone in the theater. So I know how my brain works, but I'll agree. But at the same time, I almost feel like you and I should be put in a chair like in Clockwork Orange and just, you know, not be able to look away from the screen, but also with the subtitles, because some of that information could be in here.
And I bet you'd get all of it in a viewing too, because this is one of those we designed it for multiple views.
All right, Sammy, what you do is you have a child.
I totally agree with that. I definitely admit it could just be me. Yeah. But that's just kind of an issue I had.
You got
well, here's what...
I just had so many questions at the end, but that's really normal for me with movies. I'm like, why? Why this? Why that? Why?
Is it time for the big question?
I guess it is.
I think it is.
All right. Aisley, Joseph, Sammy, did you survive Encanto?
Who do you want to go first?
Aisley,
did you survive watching Encanto?
You know, I'm not really that sure, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Okay.
Probably yes.
Hey, no. You know what? That's okay. Sometimes I don't even know.
Probably a yes, though. And so, one more thing that is very topic.
God.
You made a noise.
I survived it. I really liked it. It's one of those. I think I definitely agree with Sammy. I think this is better than Frozen, mainly because I haven't seen it 500 times now.
but you just tempted fate.
Yeah. Well, don't get me wrong. Frozen is not a bad movie. I got sick of seeing it.
Yeah. It's time to admit it wasn't that great either.
No, it is definitely overplayed. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I even liked the little touches. It's one of those. If I went back and watched it again, I'd probably pick up on a lot of things I didn't pick up before.
Sammy?
Okay. Yes, I survived. I think it was a beautiful film. Would I watch it again? Yeah. I mean, I would not be mad to sit down and watch this film. I'm still kind of at my age. I still think Saturday morning.
Her age runs with 30.
Does not. I think that Saturday morning cartoons are still fun. So, yeah, I mean, I did. Is it my favorite Disney movie? No. Probably not even breaking necessarily. And well, I don't know. I've never sat down and like ranked them, but not breaking into the top five. I'm a big fan of old school Disney, and nothing's ever really going to come close for me. I know that's
okay. Before we go on, what is your definition of old school Disney?
My definition of old school Disney is what I grew up on. Lion King, Beauty and the Beast.
90s.
Yes, because the 90s is superior to all other decades. I said what I said. Cinderella.
30s.
Mulan.
90s.
Yeah. So those and like, I mean, yeah, Jungle Book, Peter Pan, like those, we kind of get into like what are great, but they're like my second tier. I didn't love them as much. Lion King and Jungle Book take the cake. And then I understand, like, I also loved Toy Story, even though that's not Disney, it's Pixar, but.
Which is Disney.
I'm going to make a controversial statement.
Uh-oh.
Remember before the internet trolls come for me, this is just a personal opinion.
So I think that
the last great film that Disney/Pixar made was Finding Nemo. That is my personal opinion. I think movies that they have made since have been very, very good, but they don't break past that plane for me personally.
Have you seen Coco?
Coco's great.
Have not. So.
Okay.
Toy Story 4 almost made me cry.
I still haven't seen.
Oh, four. Yeah, that's right. I guess a couple of the Toy Stories did come after that. Okay, that's fair. But yeah, I don't know. Finding Nemo's pretty high ranking for me.
Or as I call it with our stage crew member Zach, the fish movie. Also, let's just say this right here, right now. If your favorite Disney movie isn't their version of Robin Hood, you're just wrong.
Not true.
No, you're wrong. You're just wrong. You just sit there in your wrongness and be wrong. As for this movie, despite coming into this saying that, you know, I was dreading watching it just because it felt like homework, but that could have been any film. We could, you know, it could have been the week they said, John, let's do Heat. And I would have been like, it's 3 hours.
And you love that movie.
And
is there
I love
ever a moment that we could have said, John, let's do The Godfather?
Godfather and Exorcist may be the only ones where I don't go, oh, homework. Those are where I go, how many times can I realistically watch this before the episode and not be considered psychotic? The limit does not exist. As for this movie, but, you know, I survived it. I had a lot of fun with it. I went in not knowing really what to expect, because I really, once I hit about the age of 13, well, I'll just go ahead and say I've never been a huge Disney fan. Even as a child, I always preferred like the Warner Brothers stuff. Does that mean I don't love and appreciate some Disney films along the way? Oh yeah, I mean, I absolutely do. So I had a lot of fun with this, and would definitely watch it again. I put the 9 songs that were written for the film on my phone, and not the full soundtrack, because it's like 35 songs, and I don't need Lin-Manuel Miranda's piano demo if we don't talk about Bruno. Brevity, Disney, brevity. But yeah, this was fun. And, you know, it was very bright, very colorful, very, you know, full of great music. And yeah, it was worth watching. And next week is, I could almost pretty much say the same thing about it.
Very true, just with worse accents.
With amazing accents.
Just the pure fact that Leonardo DiCaprio got through that movie without Mark Wahlberg and or Matt Damon punching him in the face and saying, do it right. I think that's a miracle in and of itself. And that's the true magic.
Okay, first of all, Leonardo DiCaprio can act circles around both of them blindfolded and backwards.
Marky Mark, yeah. Yes, Matt Damon, we have an argument.
Okay. I will give you Damon's better writer, only because Leo hasn't written a movie yet.
True.
Yeah. But anyway, St. Patrick's Day. It's Poe Buddy's Nerfect. But anyway, listeners, if you haven't figured it out, next week, since we'll be recording after St. Patrick's Day, we have to acknowledge the holiday in the dumbest way possible. And we're going to do our first Scorsese film, The Departed. And Sammy, if you think DiCaprio's Boston accent is bad, oh, just wait till me and Joseph get on the call next week.
Yeah, honestly, I don't remember how bad it is, but I have seen Blood Diamond, so I do know that Leonardo DiCaprio's kryptonite is any accent ever. So, but honestly, I find it endearing. Like, it's kind of cute. He makes it work.
Yeah. And Martin Sheen's in that movie, who was a president on some TV show once.
Speaking of which, oh, actually not speaking of which. I don't know if we're ready to plug things, but I do actually have a plug for this week that Leonardo DiCaprio is.
Actually, now would be a good time to ask, does anyone have anything they want to plug?
Yes. Shout out to the Rewatchables podcast. In preparation for a podcast we're going to be doing sometime this year over Sammy's favorite movie, To Not Be Named, starring more than
Critters 3 or Critters 4.
Correct.
Which Critters? Joseph, which Critters was he in?
He was in the third one.
He was in the third one. So we're doing Critters 3.
The Rewatchables podcast happens to be covering this very film for its 25th anniversary.
Now, Critters 3 is older than 25.
No comment.
I won't let you have this moment yet.
I don't know how many episodes we are away, but I am super excited. And that is going to be the question of how many times can I watch that film in a week without it being
I'm going to go with one barely, because I know how your work schedule is.
Yeah, that's probably true.
All right.
But whenever she's at work, what are you talking about?
Her boss is going to come in. If I hear My Heart Will Go On one more time, your computer's going to go on through the window, possibly with you with it.
Work.
Yeah. You know, something very important. Something very important is going on in front of you, and you're just like, hold on. You're about to be the king of the world.
Hold on. Jack's drawing her like one of the French girls.
This will be interesting to see if the week of that recording, if Sammy gets escorted from the building.
I will say that is probably going to be a long episode.
So get comfy, listeners. Yeah. Jojo, you got anything you want to plug?
No, I've watched The Big Chill for the first time ever.
Oh, good.
That movie was great.
Yeah. Rest in peace, William Hurt.
Yeah, but that was I actually did not think about that until now. Yeah. But yeah, he was great. Everybody was great in that movie.
Yeah, that was a movie that made me kind of fall in love with William Hurt as an actor. My favorite of his lines will always be whenever Meg Tilly says that she and the deceased, you know, had sex the night before he died, and he just goes, "Wow, went out with a bang and not a whimper."
And that is a great one.
Yeah. If I outlive all of you, I expect y'all to handle my funeral the way they handled.
So not very well.
So, yeah, not very well. Possibly on drugs, hooking up with everyone.
Well, that's the only way to do it.
Yeah. All right. I do want to give a quick shout out, and we're staying in Disney. I took a gamble and checked out Turning Red as a 40-year-old cis white man. I thoroughly enjoyed the tale of a 13-year-old Asian girl in Toronto becoming a woman and a panda. Honestly, you know, ignore all the bitching and moaning online. It is a fun movie. It's, you know, a good way for audiences of certain ages to learn about some stuff. And also, it's kind of a kaiju film. Kind of a low-key kaiju movie. So, there's a boy band in it. It's a lot of fun. I recommend checking it out. Possibly coming to the show sometime in 2024. I don't know. We'll get to it eventually. So, anyone else? We good?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, Aisley, thank you for recommending Encanto for us. And you're going to come back and do the show again, right?
She left the room. She wanted to go do something else, but yeah, she'll come back.
No fair. If we don't get to do that.
We all wanted to leave the room and go do something else.
Yes. I'm in the room I want to leave to go to.
Well, I'm surprised she went through most of the show because she's still at that age where she's like, okay, I'm bored. I'm going to go do something else.
I'm going to repeat myself. All right. Well, listeners, thank you all for coming back again. And Joseph, Sammy, thank you all for doing another episode. And I just want to say this in advance of our next episode. I am sorry, Boston.
Surviving Chick Flicks is brought to you by the Circle of Jug. The show is edited by John, and all clips used are the property of their copyright holders and no infringement is intended. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and leave us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the show. If there's anything you would like us to cover on the show, or just drop us a line at survivingchickflicks@gmail.com. The show is copyright 2022. Circle of Jug Productions, all rights reserved.